Hello there. Welcome to Tech Talks with MasterCard, where we have fascinating conversations with industry leaders about the latest in the world of technology and digital commerce. Join us as we dive in to explore the hottest trends and insights on how tech is transforming businesses and economies in India and across the globe.
Welcome, everyone. It's my privilege and honor to host this session on Pursuit of AI with my fabulous guest speakers. A very important disclaimer, the views that are being spoken of today are personal views of the guests and not MasterCard views. And with that, I just want to introduce my guests, Gerard Leonard, futurist, humanist, and a keynote speaker, author, and the CEO of Futures Agency. Welcome, Gerard. Thank you for joining. Next up is Dr. Manish Gupta, Director of Google Research. Thanks for joining, Dr. Gupta. And lastly, and definitely not the least, my go-to person for anything and everything AI, Nitendra Rajput, Senior Vice President and Head of AI Garage for MasterCard. Thank you for all the panelists for joining. And with that, I just straight away want to jump into our hot topic of generative AI and the pursuit of AI. So with that, Nitendra, I just want to ask you this question. You know, as an expert in AI, do you want to shed some light on the generative AI?
I think as technologists, we all have been using AI for a while, and even end users had been using AI for a while, right? So when people go to e-commerce websites, the recommendations that they see on what to purchase, what not to purchase, on our social media sites, the wall that we see are all recommendations which are generated by AI. Search engines, the way they operate with respect to the advertisements, all of it had been fed by AI for a while, and end users also had been using it, right? But in some sense, all of that was perhaps like me going to a restaurant and being fed a set menu. This is what is being offered by such sites and so on, right? So the possibilities therefore are endless, because now people are going to be moved from being served to give them actually stuff so that they can create things. And what happens when people start creating things is that the possibilities become endless. It has brought people to, in some sense, directly using stuff now rather than hearing it. They can actually play with it and feel it. And once they do that, then they'll have a lot of creative thoughts on how to apply. And I believe it's not just generative AI. When people go into the kitchen, then they see, oh, there are other possibilities as well. I need not use generative AI, but then people will get to see other uses of AI in their businesses and so on. And that's what will propel us. And definitely, I think definitely not a hype, but we are definitely at the tipping point.
So with that, Dr. Manish, I wanted to take your views. You know, looking forward, what are the potential disruptions that may occur as a result of this widespread adoption of AI? And as Nitendra mentioned, you know, people getting control, and as cooks themselves, what do you see as future?
Yeah, so I see many, many, again, disruptions. So one is, I would say, even the pace of right now developments in AI technology, this is far exceeding anything I've seen, at least in my research career. It's just an incredibly exciting time to be an AI researcher and a practitioner. To that kind of analogy that Nitendra mentioned of the kitchen, of you entering the kitchen, the chef is creating these dishes and people are creating these dishes that they had no idea. Now, each of us as users will have a lot of this power of AI at our disposal as virtual assistant, co-pilot, you name it. But the idea is ultimately of a really, really powerful virtual assistant that is going to assist us in different aspects of our journey, in helping me become a better learner, in helping me lead a healthier life, in helping me be more successful at work. If I'm coding, again, these virtual assistants can give me a huge head start on even coding. Today, we are limited more by our imagination. We are going to see some very, very interesting, even new use cases that we had not thought of emerge as a result of these very, very powerful emergent properties of these models.
I think what we have now in AI is a little bit like, you know, everybody wants to go to the moon now. Google's BART, other companies who want to go to the moon. Anyway, I think it's probably a good thing, but really what we have today still with large language models, it's still very much a form of IA, intelligent assistance, you know, rather than AI. That's how I look at it. I mean, imagination, intuition, creativity, true human intelligence, right? That is not in the program. And that is a very important distinction. And this is where I differ with people who are saying that we should stop the research on this and stuff. But I think intelligent assistance, as it is right now, offers a huge amount of benefit to organizations, to people. Is it sentient? Is it? No, it's far away from that, because human intelligence has 8 or 10 different types of intelligences, right? Emotional, cultural, kinesthetic, and so on. Machines don't have any of that, because the machine exists in the digital realm. You know, it's binary, and humans are multinary. It's a fundamental difference in terms of how we read the world. And there I see the benefit and the problem, which is usually the case, right? So the disruption will be in businesses that anybody with a better tool like a language model or AI will beat the other person without the tools. What we need to be careful of is that the tool becomes a purpose on its own, so that we also start abdicating, for example, like pushing off responsibility. And I think we should always keep the human in the loop and not pursue the development of a black box AI where we don't actually know what goes on inside.
You know, the fact that there is a prediction that AI will power about 95% of all customer interactions by 2025, its applications are expanding rapidly. And we know for a fact that when it comes to payments industry, the value of AI to date has been largely focused towards optimization, fraud controls, etc. So with that, Nitendra, I wanted a perspective from you that how are businesses leveraging AI's maturity to go beyond payments and combating fraud and improve customer experience?
I believe in the payments world, when you talk about customer experience, there are two things that need to be balanced. A customer experience is going to be very good if the payment is very frictionless, right? But at the same time, a customer experience is going not to be good if it results in payment fraud and so on and so forth. And actually, these two things are usually a trade-off one against the other. Where AI can play a role in is the fact that you can balance these two out. Which means that when I'm doing a payment, it is not a payment in isolation. If I can use AI to look at a much broader picture, which can tell me that, okay, this particular user has been transacting for a significantly large amount of time and seems to be a reasonably good user, especially when this user is transacting at this merchant. The time at which I'm doing this transaction looks logical to be doing a transaction at a coffee shop as opposed to doing a transaction at a bar, which happens at a different time and so on. But at the same time, you can make it contextual that if things look fishy, I'm going to introduce a friction so that I need to make sure that the transaction is happening, which is safe or not, right? So how do you balance the two things out so that you make sure that the customer experience also improves, but the security doesn't suffer, is what you can, and which is what businesses are leveraging to make sure that the customer experience improves, and part of the customer experience is also actually trust. So looking at things from a holistic perspective, if we go deeper, the whole idea is that if we can see more data around the merchants, around the cardholders and so on, around a specific payment, if we can mine that using sophisticated AI algorithms, then we can figure out what is the right trade-off and then improve the customer experience significantly, which is where businesses are moving towards from a technology AI perspective.
With that, Dr. Manish, I wanted to, you know, move pivot more on e-commerce. You know, since Nitendra already spoke about transactions and, you know, our challenges in the transactions, from an e-commerce perspective, how do you see AI disrupting e-commerce, whether it's personalization, whether it's advertisements? What are your views on that?
I mean, what we are seeing is, for instance, we've applied AI to even like help even small and medium businesses who may not even have a website of their own. But let's say they are providing some basic information to get their business listed. And today we are creating text ads and with kind of already the text to image and text to video capabilities, we see very soon, right, being able to create very, very interesting, compelling ads from small businesses, right, who don't have their own kind of I mean, even who are not very sophisticated about how to even create such media content and so on, being able to create very, very compelling ads. And down the road, we can also see, for instance, these ads becoming very ability to personalize even these videos, right, to the interests of the specific user.
Jared, I want to move away, and you know, I know personalization in AI, and I attended one of your seminars previously. You mentioned that it's not limited only to financial services, right? So fields such as music, art, there are new AI use cases that are emerging, and you know, there's an increasingly challenges and which the traditional view of music industry or the way artists are looking at it. So can you share some view on, you know, how to create more personalized and engaging experiences for music listeners while also impacting the broader creative landscape?
Well, first, you know, there's two major leaps that we're getting to as far as all of this is concerned. The first one is voice. In all reality, we're not going to sit there and type into our mobile phone a query or so on the chat, but we're going to speak to it. And this is not far away. And the next big leap is, of course, virtual reality, being in a place where I have that virtual person next to me. Those are the leaps that we're seeing. Now, as far as the creative industry goes, I really do believe that better tools generally tend to create better content and lower the threshold of production and put more things out there and put better things out there. Of course, it always does the opposite as well, which we've seen in the music industries. I think as far as creativity goes, it is going to be an amazing tool that I could say I want to create lyrics in the style of David Bowie. And it's very likely not to be totally spot on, but it will inspire me. So while it's going to be a power tool, much like other tools, like remixing tools and all these kind of things that we've seen. I think the process of creativity and meaning is something that is human territory.
You know, I want to now focus attention and take views from both Dr. Manish and Jared Yu on a very different tangent, right? There is also an increased chatter on, you know, governance structure that can oversee development and implementation of AI. So on this key topic, I just wanted to get the views, you know, what can be the role of enablers such as yourself, regulatory bodies that can play in determining this, you know, how do we determine good versus a bad behavior in the AI system, right? A very interesting topic. So I just wanted to get your views, Dr. Manish.
Yeah, no, so thanks for bringing this up. While on one hand, these large language models are extremely powerful, it is also well known that they will hallucinate. They will make up stuff. So we all know that despite all of these efforts to make these AI models very robust, they are going to make mistakes. So when they make mistakes, who's liable? Now, is it going to be the provider of that pre-trained model? Is it you as a company which has provided the final solution who's liable? Or is it the provider of the pre-trained model which is really providing most of the the intelligence, so to speak, right? The smartness, right, in that model. And so many, again, amazing artists who created that wonderful art, which has been, again, used to train these models. How do you do appropriate attribution? So I think there are going to be so many kind of issues, both kind of that we know about and also new issues that are emerging as a result of the power of these models, that we need a lot more of that robust discussion.
In the realm of the AI governance, you know, what we, Dr. Manish briefly touched upon, what regulations currently exist to ensure that, you know, the development currently is aligned with the societal values and the interest and the human-centric approach, which you, you know, very often talk about?
Yes, well, I think it's quite clear that we are at a pivot point of society, kind of a fork in the road, you could say. This is probably one of the most powerful inventions we've ever made, kind of like the internet itself, you could say. And because it's so powerful, there's an argument, of course, for precaution and proaction at the same time, which is a strange thing to say, of course. But, you know, in the end, we have two different challenges here. One is the immediate challenges of intelligent systems, which is about automation and privacy and control and those, you know, societal things by and large, but they're not existential. Well, not in that same way. And then the second thing, which is a lot of companies like OpenAI and others are seeking to build a general intelligence, right? An AGI, an artificial general intelligence. And if you take the issue of not knowing what goes on inside of this app, this system, when you blow that up to machines that have an IQ, you know, cognitive IQ of a trillion, we probably wouldn't want to have a general intelligence, a human-like intelligence. That is existential. And so for me, that's two different things. They are, of course, related. But so that's something we have to keep an eye on. And I think like anything that's really powerful, whether you're talking about bioengineering, CRISPR-Cas9, human longevity, all of those things, when they become really powerful, we have to have a balanced approach and a collaborative approach on governance. Quite clearly, artificial intelligence is the next really big thing in technology, period. But it is tempting to forego the caution. And so we need to have a system in place that involves social contracts, it involves debate, it involves some regulation. So I'm, for example, a great proponent of the Digital Markets Act in the European Commission and the AI Act, which of course isn't perfect, but it will steer the pot a little bit.
My last topic that I wanted to get views, which is close to my heart personally, and as MasterCard, you know, as our motto of doing well by doing good, is what are the views this panel has on AI for good, right? AI for underprivileged. Can this help supplement our efforts for making sure we can use AI for good, helping the underprivileged, helping climate change, helping other aspects which are affecting our society as a whole?
I really kind of feel very passionately about it. That, I mean, as we started kind of the lab with the kind of autonomy that was given to me, very consciously, one of the kind of themes I picked with a lot of my colleagues is this inclusive AI mission, that how do we develop AI in a manner that really brings the benefits to billions of new people? And it's led to efforts like we have this project where we are building a single model that will cover over 125 languages in India. And we are collecting speech samples from 773 districts of India so that we capture the full linguistic diversity. And I can share that in many cases, we find that many of those, like there are at least like of the order of 50 of these languages, which we want represented in our multilingual model, for which there is zero data corpus today, zero known digital data that researchers have access to. And so we are, in some sense, building the first ever digital corpus, right, for many of these languages. Another area is public health. We've had this collaboration with the nonprofit Urban. So even some very, very mundane sounding problems, so they have these voice messages that they deliver to expecting mothers during their every week of the pregnancy and after the child is born. And they have data that shows that women who stick with that program, they have better health outcomes for themselves and their babies. But usually over half of the women end up dropping out of the program. So they asked us to apply AI for this very simple problem of, given the few human volunteers that we have, can you help us identify which are those women that the human volunteers should reach out to, which is now deployed in production with that nonprofit. And even you touched upon sustainability and agriculture, where we are able to now apply AI models over, let's say, satellite images to be able to tackle problems in terms of identifying farm boundaries, identify what crop is being grown, estimate the yields and so on, which can unlock so many tremendous use cases for the farmer in terms of getting access to a loan, getting access to insurance, and even kind of financially encouraging sustainable farming practices that will be good for the environment. So again, there's a lot of, again, opportunity to do amazing work, to start applying AI in a manner that benefit billions of people, right, on our planet who have so far been untouched by technology.
So with that, thank you once again, and hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Tech Talks with MasterCard. We hope you found today's discussion valuable. Don't forget to share it with your friends and colleagues, and do subscribe to the podcast to stay updated on upcoming episodes. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay ahead of the curve.